and welcome to episode 456 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. My name is Vince Hunt, and joining me as always is the creator of the comic series Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And even though this is an audio medium, we record via Zoom, so sometimes we can see each other's faces. But I've decided not to look at his faces this week because I would get too aroused. It's Tony Esmond.
Thank you. David Crosby cosplay.
Oh, yes. Blast from the past.
We saw a lot of each other on Friday, didn't we? At a drink.
Oh, yeah. Drink and draw. It was good fun.
That was good.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah. Thanks to all those turning up. We had a good laugh and a chat. And a draw.
Why'd you say like that? And a chat.
Chat.
And a chat.
I was really tired by the end of that one. I don't know why, but it does go quickly when you think we're on for like 2.5 hours. It goes quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah. Much like this show. Time flies by. And thank you for listening, as always, folks. This is, as you can tell, there's no guests this week. It's just three amigos. And we've got a couple of little subjects to talk about. We've got one particular sort of narrative comics reading topic. I know Dan wants to ask us something about a particular super team that's sort of on.
Currently in the zeitgeist.
And and of course, there's plenty of great recommendations, etc., to check out. And of course, there's other stuff you can check out via our wonderful sponsor, Global Comics.
Yes.
The place to go for digital comics. There's a huge library of titles available to read on there right now, from thousands of indie creators to hundreds of publishers. Image, Boom, Tokyopop, TKO Studios, Sourcepoint Press, Humanoids, to name but a few. The catalogue's growing all the time. I mean, literally, I'm just sort of browsing. I've been checking it, getting into a bit of Dynamite at the moment. Like, trying to. I haven't read too much of Dynamite before, I must say.
I like Dynamite a lot. You know, I'm always a massive fan of the pulpy stuff they do.
But there's loads of other stuff as well. For instance, we've got a couple of highlights as always, haven't we, Jets?
Well, I think a good place to go, if you do sign up for Global Comics, please do. I think one of the best things you can do is go and read Drawn Under the Influence, DUI 1, 2 and 3, because if you do, you'll be raising money for charity. I'm guessing it either goes to Cancer Research Refuge or Mind, depending on which issue you read, because we have a different charity for each issue. But go and have a read through it if you haven't read it already, or if you want to fancy another reread, which is what I did this week. You can go and have a read through them all, so you can do that, and it will raise money for those chosen charities that we raise money for at the time.
And obviously we've got a lot of like international listeners as well. Hello to you all. But for instance, if like a physical edition was not on the table when you heard us talk about it quite a lot every time one of these anthologies has come out, now's the perfect time to sort of get involved. And who knows, you could read it and then think, that's the sort of thing I want to be involved in. And you could join us.
Thanks to Eamon for uploading it as well. The editor of 2 and 3, Sarah Harris, been the editor of the first one. There you go. Thanks, guys. I don't know what we're going to do yet. There's been a few more conversations, haven't we, about what we should do with the next sort of project. But it'd be nice to see what we get on with.
Dan, have you got any anything on there?
Well, Go Power Rangers. And if you want to go read them on the app, there's a whole slew of Power Rangers books. Absolutely reams of them. Loads.
I did see they were highlighted, actually, weren't they?
Yeah, they've got a little bar of their own on there, haven't they?
They do, yeah. Go read them.
I don't think I've ever read a Power Rangers comic. Is that sacrilege?
I've never read a Power Rangers comic.
I don't think so. I think
I've never watched a Power Rangers episode either.
Yeah, but...
I think I've watched them with my son. He was into Power Rangers Samurai.
People can say a similar thing about June comics and stuff like that. So.
But they're wrong.
They're obviously wrong.
Be careful what you say, Dan.
one last thing. There's the Living Dead as well, like zombie ones, and there's one in there called Rags. And if you
we like that one.
If you like a ginger-haired lady with clothes running around the apocalypse.
I was looking at that thinking...
I think that's another one that Dan has gone on about, that one.
I've mentioned that before.
Years ago.
It on social media. I was like, it can't be that blatant. And I've read it. And I was like, yeah.
It's completely blatant. To the point.
God bless him.
Yeah.
God bless him.
Yeah. Do what you do and do it well. And
and all that and more.
And and on the Global Comics app, not only can you read all of those great comics and more, but you can follow creators, set reading status filters, create your own library for stuff you want to read later. There's loads of different sort of filters for read later, stuff you're reading. It's really handy, actually, sort of keeping track of some stuff. And also release notifications for books you're looking forward to checking out in the future, whether it be the series themselves or from the publishers, etc.
I had a conversation with someone on there this week.
Did you?
So the dude from Hound, you know, I reviewed Hound a few weeks ago.
Yes.
I had a little conversation with him and he thanked us for the review and everything.
Nice.
And listen, if you get your books on there, do tell us and we'll promote it.
On
Globals.
Yeah.
And if we could approach him and ask for an ACP one, that would be amazing.
What do you mean, an ACP?
Like an ACP recommends the comics you've worked on.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good idea.
A week promo.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah. We should put our anthology.
People look at that section and go, who the fuck are they?
Who the fuck are these lot?
They'd be all fuckers. Right.
Never recommend these ever again.
No, but
sexy people.
If you happen to be a creator yourself, you can publish your digital comics for free.
Might lead to that plan I had about the disabled toilet at conventions.
Don't.
I was telling you about earlier.
And they offer loads. No, because I don't want to clarify it, but I just got to let you know that what he just said sounds really, really wrong.
Yeah.
It's wrong. It's unwise,
but not illegal.
God. But anyway, shut up. If you're a creator, you can put your digital comics on Global Comics, and they offer loads of great tools for indie creators to help with publishing, marketing, and more. But don't just believe us. Check it out. Go to globalcomics.com. That is comics with an X. You can download the app now on the Apple App Store or Google Play and start reading digital comics. And there's free comics as well. There's the stuff that they're obviously, if you subscribe to it, the subscription.
There's loads of free stuff on there, actually.
There's loads of free stuff.
Yeah. And like,
I think some people use it as like a web comics platform. So they update on there.
Totally. I think web comics creators as well. They're some of like, that, especially digitally, like online and stuff, they're like pros at just hustling. Do you know what I mean? Just getting, they got the web comic. It's going to be on every service. It's going to be, it's all about visibility, isn't it? Which
would you put Vanguard on there, Dan? Like as a daily update?
Vanguard is on there, all the back issues.
Yeah, I mean, but as a daily update as well, you know?
To be honest, I'm so locked into the workflow now. I just want to get it done and kind of. I'm kind of sick of working on a webcomic. I don't want to do a webcomic anymore. I kind of want to release like whole issues. So once Vanguard's done, that's what I'm going to be doing moving forward. But I guess you could. I've not really looked into it. I'd quite happily do so. Just about getting the eyes on the comic, isn't it?
Well, I think, and thank you to Global Comics for supporting the show as always. They're awesome. The guys there are really great. I think that's a lovely segue, though, Dan, to our starter topic. That makes it sound like we're on Mastermind. Your starter topic for 10 is...
disabled toilets.
You can't use them. It's illegal.
Is it illegal?
No,
I don't think so.
Sometimes I find they're the nicer places to do your business if it's quiet. You know, no one else needs
it. Why, because you've got more leg room?
Yeah.
Like, there's loads of space.
Just got a whole room, whole big room.
I tell you what, you're a couple of savages.
I did it.
Allegedly.
I would never do it if someone else needed it, but if it was nobody there, I'd do it,
if you got a bad tummy and you're like, oh, I've got to go.
He was in there and then like someone banging on the door, so like, come on, I've got to come in. Yeah, like, oh no, what am I going to do? Has that been in Curb? I would imagine.
No, it's in
the IT crowd.
An
amazing scene. But anyway, we just completely moved away from that lovely segue.
That's what I do on purpose because that's what you're doing. Yeah.
But Dan, obviously,
we do my one first.
You're talking about the narratives. No, we get to your
so
one
needy. So needy.
No. But you're talking about like your next comics moving forward.
Yes.
In terms of. Because obviously Vanguard, I know it's a web comic and you're putting up pages, but you've structured it very much like individual issues. It's a long running sort of series. You know, it's an ongoing series.
But like our sort of main topic, I've got an ending which I'm working to.
Yeah,
yeah, that's important, I think. Because go on.
Because
you don't want to.
Yeah, go on.
Well, you kind of, for me, like I want endings in stories. Mm. It is important. Like that's the payoff of. all the work you're putting in. If it kind of continually goes on and on, sometimes this can be a bit
Well,
like a
interesting
stage.
point. Are we going to say what the subject is before we sort of?
To get us properly into it, I thought it's an interesting topic of discussion is like limited series or mini series, as a lot of us know the sort of term, versus those sort of ongoing, sort of longer form storytelling.
Well, not necessarily even, I'm going to say not necessarily even mini series. I'm just saying series that are started with an end in mind. You know what I mean?
Now we're not going to talk. This is the only time I'm going to mention these two names, but to give you a shorthand of the kind of narrative structure we're talking about here, a Hellboy series. What's that? Four, five issues, something like that. You know, the classic ones. And it was like Conqueror Worm and stuff, four issues, done. Where something like Invincible is ongoing, you know, there is no one,
Was that
two,
like
three, four.
200 plus issues? Was just under 200. I
Not
can't remember how
sure.
much you ran to, but that
See,
was.
I think with Hellboy, you're talking about a publishing model.
Interesting.
Yeah, no, I'm not just to play slight devil's advocate with that, is I think if the business, I think if the business heads could support it running as an ongoing, I think it's slightly more likely to do that. But I think selling it in separate stories, it's a very subtle difference, isn't it?
But
Selling it in
which
separate
is
stories
to
works
go
better
on
for them.
from and to go on from that, do you think, like, just straight out of the gate, that despite the sort of, you know, there's some minor successes of ongoings, that the mini series or the limited series is completely the more viable option for independent creators if they want longevity?
It does. So you're talking like snatched sort of four issues here, four issues, maybe do like a mini series a year or something. I mean, it's almost like a covert way of doing an ongoing in a way for me. You know what I mean? It's almost like a slightly financially more viable way of doing an ongoing
It's
because
because you
there
get
is
more issue
development.
ones.
Yeah,
Because
there's development from issue one for the first mini series all the way to the end of it. And room to go beyond that, I think, sometimes.
And I think because I think the comics model, the story, the comic storytelling model, for the most part, we live in a universe of arcs. Do you know what I mean? Even if they're ongoings,
We do now,
certainly. You know, I just mentioned one series there, but lots of you know, for instance, you take a saga, for instance, and another ongoing, but there's probably like a six issue arc, and then there's another six issue arc. But they're telling a longer form story, but they're still in almost. They're still using almost a sort of a sub mini series model, aren't they? Within a
I think
longer
they
form.
are. I think what I mean, we talked about it a bit before we came on. I think it's important that we almost define what we're talking about here. So we're define to me, let me just see what if you guys agree with this. So what I would say a limited series is a story that when the creative person who starts it or the team that start it, they know when and where it's roughly when and where it's going to end. So it's designed to be, it can be designed to be three issues. It can be, in the case of Cerebus, designed to be 300 issues. But you know what the chapters are going to be. I don't know about Dave Sim because Dave Sim's not a normal human being, but much as I love his stories. But I think with certain ones, you know where it's going to end. Where you've got something like The Amazing Spider-Man, it works like Coronation Street, doesn't it? It works where it's just going to keep going. It's just story, story, story. Keep going, keep going, keep going. You might get the odd reboot, but it's not planned in.
And
You'll get creators changing.
I think it's interesting, and for the focus of this conversation, we are probably going to focus more on the independent ones, but you can't do it without mentioning like ones from the big two,
Yeah,
like
a bit of frame of
Spider,
reference.
yes, frame reference. But like obviously with these big two and their big IPs and stuff, there is the they're just going to keep churning out. They're just going to keep making the comics. You know, if you look at them as a product, the product's going to keep happening. But if you're an individual creator, I think, and you've got a character, it's a harder thing to do that, isn't it? You really do have to know where the road is going before you even start, don't you think?
And it's a thing that's very individual to fiction in a way to me, because I actually think it's something that we are very used to and we admire to have a story that starts and has an ending. But it's not real life. Real life doesn't have an ending, does it? You know, you whatever it be, you know, the two lovers run off on the train together at the end of the movie. It's never the end of their lives. It's not, but we kind of consider it the end of the story, a lovely little moment in time that it ends.
And there,
but
there is
it's
all
not
that
normal.
There is all that, and I find this with like, there's been some series. I know there's some TV series when they finish, you're like, oh, that was the perfect ending. Oh, I so wish I was still following them because you had such enjoyment to it. But then 10 years down the line, they do a reunion or something,
and you're like, oh,
and
God,
it's
no.
And it doesn't work because you didn't. You know, your heart says, I want more of this, but do we really want more of this?
No.
Yeah, I mean, and then from a comics point of view, I think, I mean, I genuinely think that Vertigo might be the daddy of this, the daddy of the long and extended limited run, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got stuff like The Invisibles Transmit, you've got stuff like Preacher. I don't think we need any more. It's such
I know
a lovely series.
I know there's a few. I mean, I know you're going to tell me that there's going to be quite a lot of them, but always in my head, whenever I think of the Vertigo model, it seemed like around the 60 issue.
It was quite a common.
That was
Why the
sweet,
Last Man.
The sweet spot is around that time, isn't it?
Scalped. Around that. Yeah.
Another thing as well, usually it's single creators, like a creative team or one creator on their own doing this kind of run. Is it more common to sort of like have one writer and then you have artists jumping in and out?
It can be, but I think it has to have a sort of consistent view.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the time. And I mean, there are other artists on Snatched. And if you take the whole of Preacher as one thing, you got the miniseries attached. There were a couple of artists on it as well.
Yeah.
That worked as part of it. But having that consistent view of it, I think it's extremely important.
You have the singular sort of vision to sort of guiding force to drive it through.
Yeah.
Because otherwise...
I mean, they have those rare moments as it's sort of like the writer will keep going, but the artist just needs a break for like four issues or an issue or two, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
we've had that before.
Yeah,
I think it lends it. Plus, if we're talking, I mean, the two, perhaps I should say Image as well, but Image and Vertigo seem to be the daddies of this for me.
Yeah.
You know, the ones that sort of immediately spring to mind. And there are a lot, Aftershock, for example, there's a lot of other companies that do it. But I think that their subject matter lends itself to that limited run as well.
Yes.
I think superheroes doesn't necessarily lend itself because we're so used to the soap opera nature of a superhero going on for 80 years, for example. But I think horror tends to it. I think romance tends to it. And I think also heist stories tend to a limited run.
Definitely.
I think horror is the one that really jumps to mind because where do you go when the villain is defeated? It's like a slasher movie. You can have the return, but...
It depends on the universe you're building, though. For instance, was it Dark Horse that did Harrow County? You know Cullen Bunn's Harrow County?
Yeah.
That went for quite a few trades. That was a sort of longer term, but there was still arcs to it. You know, there was very clear, here's the first...
It depends on the setup, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, same with heist comics. Like, they've got a build to the heist and it either goes well or it doesn't. But then...
Yeah. And you don't want to be 60 issues down the line on the same heist. Surely that...
The heist happens in issue 10 and they're still trying to get away by issue 65.
Same with romance. Yeah. Like, either romance that works out or it doesn't. And then...
As soon as they've done the Beast of Two Backs, you're not interested in them, really, you know.
That's the trouble, like, with any kind of, like, romance, usually in comics or soaps.
Yeah.
You know, they're doomed because there's no drama in them living happily ever after.
Because we love the fact that more often, you know, not the non-psychopaths of us love the fact they get together and they find each other and they fall in love and literally the phrase happily ever after is what ends the story, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, with a romance story. But yeah, you're right. If it's the X-Men and they fall in love and they discover each other, you know that in a couple of years, one of them's going to die or kidnapped or something.
It's almost like if you go like as an an independent comic, if you're going to have like a romantic arc like that, you've almost got to like keep teasing and then deliver on it right at the end. That's one of the nicest things that after all this time, you finish on that high. Because if you did something like that, then you've got another 30 issues of it.
Yeah.
It's a real difficult thing to do, isn't it?
Here's another question. Do you think the limited run has become more popular in the last so many years?
Potentially. As readers have kind of like grown and matured, I feel like that's what you move to.
Yeah.
Certainly for me, it's like, well, I kind of want a bit more of a rounded kind of piece of entertainment, and having something like a limited series where I know I'm getting the beginning, middle, and end, and it's not just an ongoing.
I mean, for me, when it sort of hit first, like the sort of miniseries were in more in the sort of mainstream comics when I was reading at the time, like that sort of that mid-90s boom. There was so many different miniseries, like these four.
I think the first miniseries was mid-80s, wasn't it? Worlds of Krypton or something.
Yeah.
It was reasonably late in the medium.
Now these days, most ongoings are a mini.
it'll become a mini. Punisher.
Yeah.
I'm Ring sure that they, bell, they, we mentioned the Punisher again.
There must be some editorial thing that says, like, you don't mention how many issues there are of this. You don't put it on the cover like it's, a new one of five because, you know, it might get fucking cut.
But the thing is, it's fascinating, like that angle of it, because if things were announced as miniseries and people know this has got a finite end, they're going to tell a story like this, would more people buy into it? Because sometimes the idea of an ongoing can be daunting as a reader. Do you know what I mean? If you're going to start, right, I'm going to start this new ongoing. This could be even if you love it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. After I think the if first we ignore couple the size of arcs, aspect.
Yeah, it's a commitment.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of books that are some of the best books out there that no one's talking about anymore because they're on their fourth and their fifth arc and they're not the new hotness. We're all about the new hotness, aren't we, in comics, whatever the new thing is. You know.
Number one sell as well, man. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Number one sell. I've got to laugh, just got another ring the bell for Punisher. I've got to laugh the fact that Punisher was meant to be five issues and got reduced to four. But in the old days, with the first Punisher miniseries, it was meant to be four and got made into five. As a fucking telling tale. Yeah.
So here's a question. Which of the, you know, if I was the choice question, miniseries versus these longer arcs, what do you prefer to read?
I prefer to be invested in an ongoing.
Right.
I prefer to take it on board, throw myself into it. I think I'm still a bit of the mindset that miniseries can be throwaway and can actually often mean nothing.
Okay.
I've read a lot and I've mentioned a lot of them on this show that, like, this is great, felt like a movie, sort of like one and done, kind of a wonderful bit of entertainment, and then I move on with my life. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean I've gone back and revisited them or anything like that, but like you say, Tony, like, you want to invest in the characters and be taken on that ride, don't you?
Yeah.
What about you, Dan?
I would say it's entirely on the material and how good it is,
good
or
point,
not.
Actually.
I mean, if it's a good miniseries, I'll read it. If it's a good ongoing, I'll read it. But maybe I'd be more inclined to go for the ongoing.
Yeah.
But if it was like a fabulous series of miniseries that built on, they continually built
that,
on the characters.
And I think that's what a lot of stuff does, isn't it? Now?
Yeah.
Like I say, that arc format, for instance, the Image, what I consider to be the Image format now, you know, that six issues, go away for a little bit, come back, do another six issues. They keep, and certainly I think like other publishers like Boom are doing a similar kind of thing, I think, sometimes.
Well, Marvel are covertly doing it at the moment with some of the cosmic characters. They're doing this Resurrection series, which is first issue is Silver Surfer, then it jumps to Captain Marvel, but it's still the same story.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
But,
I mean, with a miniseries, you've got that opportunities of telling different stories from the different periods of the character's life, and
you
can have time jumps, and like this miniseries ends there, the next one picks up 2 years down the line where
do you think in terms of storytelling, which for you guys, for an independent creator doing it, is more daunting to do? Because, and I'll just give a little bit of more detail to that question, is the fact that, like, with a miniseries, if you've got four issues, you've got to have all killer, no filler, haven't you?
Yeah, I think do a four issue series, but make them all standalone readable. If you're doing it, if you're an indie UK small press,
right,
I think the weight of selling the second issue of a story, I don't think works within the UK small press model.
Yeah,
because they take so long to come out.
Yeah, I think we're finding certainly with the UK small press, it's almost like a smaller sort of OGNs, isn't it? That kind of, like, you know, like a larger format, like a 40 page comic.
A carry on one, a story that carries on. I feel like you've got to have one and done's in that issue to get them.
I mean, it's what you've done with Viper, Dan. That's what you're doing with Viper, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly
the model. Just every issue can be your first, and it doesn't matter. If
I was thinking about it today because I ordered the second issue of Fractures up for pre-order. Go to
brilliant! I'll get that.
Get hold of that.
And as much as it's a really good comic, and we really liked it, and Wolfgang is a really nice guy, like genuinely one of the nicest guests we've had. But I thought I'm going to read the first one again before I read the second one because I just want to make sure I know where everything is and everything is, you know. But I think, which I don't mind doing, I'm going to fucking spend my day. We spend our days reading comics, don't we? But I think for a casual reader, you need to just bear that in mind. I think the good thing with that series, it'll be a trade.
Yes,
I
I
think.
think it may make a fantastic trade.
Yeah, of course, the middle ground that we haven't mentioned yet, these sort of what used to be called maxi series, didn't they? Which is something that, especially at DC, we're getting out of Tom King. So,
Are we talking like whenever you say maxi series, the first one I immediately think of, and it's the Welcome Back Frank when Ennis and Dillon did the first Punisher arc, which was 12 issues.
yeah, it's normally 12, isn't it? Yeah, and
12,
I
isn't
think
it?
Secret Wars was 12, was it?
Okay.
Is that right? You know, and it's not, we don't really hear maxi series anymore because it
No,
sounds a bit
no.
too like maxi pad, doesn't it? But
That might not be
what's the
the
maxi stand
reason.
for?
Is it in large or rather mini? So we have mini series and maxi series, didn't we? All right, now they tend
That's
to be
pretty
called
fucking obvious now
mini.
you've said that.
Yeah.
Having a senior moment.
But he's done like Human Target and Amiga
Yeah.
Men and stuff like
Yeah.
that. And I know if you hear him being interviewed, he talks about he likes that model. He likes to take a B, C list character and give him almost like an evergreen 12 issue series, which can sit on the shelf. It comes out as two trades, gets collected into one trade, and can go on the shelf and be an evergreen like that. And I think a lot of titles do that. I think it, and I think it's going to have shelf life if you do that as well, which I
I
liked.
mean, you always want to kind of go, right, it's surely going to go for a character that's kind of not been explored in its entirety and
Yeah.
try and put like the definitive kind of spin on them.
Like the Martian Manhunters and, you
Yeah.
know, these sort of characters of this world, yeah.
Do you think though, for like a just say an indie sort of UK creator, gets a gig with a small publisher, whoever they may be. And they've got that the maxi series option in their mind, you know,
The 12 issues, yeah.
12 issues, two trades, and one omnibus kind of thing. Do you think that publishers would be open to that? 'Cause, I mean, on
I think
paper,
it depends.
if you look on
Yeah.
it, if you look at it on paper, they can make money three times over: one for the
Yeah.
individual issues, two for the individual trades, and then three for the omnibus. It
Well,
sounds.
for me, they'll make money twice because I'll read it on the app. And then I'll buy the trade if I like it. So, you know, it's always at least a double dip for me if it's good. Yeah, I think it depends on the publisher because, you know, we all know what publishers are like these days. You know, there's very few are going to pick up a single issue at all series. But I think it's a good little model. It's a few more than perhaps a lot of publishers would be happy with doing 12, signing a contract for 12.
Seems like a big ask nowadays.
Hunger in the Dusk, for example, as much as that's a brilliant series, has taken a break for a couple of months, isn't it? In the middle. So that's going to be,
Do we know how long that's going for?
I think it's 12, and then they're going to go back to it again, aren't they? I
I don't know.
think
I
so.
can't wait to see more.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think I'm allowed to say that. Yeah.
You said it now.
Yeah, fuck it. Come for me, wild goose.
And to be fair, he didn't sound too convinced to himself when he said it, so.
But it's also something that has risen since the growth of the graphic novel, because how many times have we heard people refer to Watchmen as a graphic novel? And I've kind of think, well, in a way it is, but it was actually just came out as comics when I was reading it. You know, there's this sort of middle ground sometimes, isn't there? And I think you've got a lot of books now that are designed for that graphic novel market. And you know, one of the, like we said, Image and Dark Horse and all these Aftershock and all these sort of people, that's how they work. But if you look at some of the singles that are coming out from even Fantagraphics, and some of the similar sort of companies, they're doing both. So, Red Room, for example, is Fantagraphics' biggest seller for ages, but it came out in singles. But I'm sure it's been designed for a trade. Yeah. Well, the one that came to mind when this come up as a subject when we said what we're going to talk about this week is Black Hole by Charles Burns for me, which was 12 issues, clearly planned from start to finish, but it took him like 10 years to do. But that's a limited series that now is an evergreen hardback, I think I'm going to say.
It's
Did
good that you
you?
kind of you keep up with it, and then like at the end you got the collected edition, so it's kind of
For
it's
us
the
people with
double
too much
that's
money in
it
our
yeah
lives,
double dipping in
yeah.
it now, because There's series I've got in singles, and it's like, well, I want that trade of that. Like,
yeah.
And I'm going to get
as a
it.
It's like Miller World. Exactly that, isn't it?
As a reader, one thing I would say to creators who are like looking to create their opuses, all their mediums and stuff, is always narrative pacing is a very important thing for me.
Yep.
And I'd say that for a raft of a lot of new like creators coming up, like and younger creators, which is wonderful to see. But they're also they've been brought up on, you know, the manga or the web web comics. Now the stuff, and we always kind of like, sometimes we want, well, most of the time I would say we want to make the sort of comics we want to read. That's the whole point of it, isn't it? So you're a fan of this stuff and you want to create it, but the thing about those mangas are, it's a huge, you know, that's a huge business. The
it's a
whole
big undertaking.
It's completely big undertaking. So narratively, the writing, everything, they do things differently. Yes, you can have a book that's essentially just one fight going on for like 150 pages. You can do all of that. And a web comic, for instance, there's an awful lot of stuff that can just be like a soap opera, just ongoing, because people are buying into it and they're loving the characters and stuff. But when it comes,
like, the real estate's not an issue.
Exactly.
Page count's irrelevant.
But when you break it down to creating a comic book, you need to, if you want to really grab readers, I think that, especially in a printed book, in a collection, you have to get that pacing right. I read one this week, which I'm not going to mention the name. I love the art and the way it looks and everything. And it is a webcomic that has then been collected, and I'll tell you guys after the show which one it is, but
okay.
Collected and published by a publisher, by a proper publisher in the trades, and it's obviously got a following, you know, it's got fans, it's doing well, which is great. And I was like, oh, I'm interested in this, and I was reading it, and I honestly, it read, this is going to sound derogatory and I don't mean it this way, but it read like a webcomic in the fact that I got to the end of the first trade, which is about 130 pages, and I thought, I'm supposed to know what the story is by now.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, because it was conversation, it was relationship drama, it was building up, it was like lots of pages about like someone trying to get a job, and they were taking this joke and spreading it over 15 pages. Because in a webcomic, you know, that's
it.
You can do that. But I was reading it in a different format. I was reading it in a issue by issue one. And I was thinking, when's this going to start? When is this going to start?
And you've paid for it as well.
Yeah. And
the webcomic is.
And yeah. And I kept going three trades, and it feels like it hasn't even started yet.
Yeah.
So I was like, there's something it's not working in this format. It was fascinating to me, that. And I think some new creators who, they've got the passion, they love these webcomics, they love this manga. If you want to put it out in issues, you can't do the thing that you love reading in that way, because it won't work.
I'll tell you, the other thing, it's almost the opposite side of the coin that I've noticed with companies like Boom occasionally, you know, the sort of smaller US style publishers, is the fucking apps. They just throw everything they want to say in the first issue, and then for issues 2, 3, 4, and 5 they're just running about down corridors.
You know, essentially,
and you're like, I think, no, if you've got something that you know how long it's going to be, you know how spread out it can be, you've got to drop narratives, you've got to drop story twists, you've got to drop personality changes in the middle of the story. You don't just give everything in the issue and then literally, you know, it's the old Doctor Who story, just run up and down a corridor for fucking
two episodes.
You know?
Tell people what they need to hear to keep them invested.
Yeah. And then keep them excited by dropping different things as they go along. And people don't do that anymore.
The importance of a cliffhanger as well.
Yeah.
Or sort of like, oh, I can't wait to read the next issue. Because I've lost track over the amount of time that we've been doing the show that some indie comics just end. And I'm like, do you want me to read the next one?
Yeah, where's that?
I think Kirkman and Miller do it best for me. I know it's, you know, you could have your cynical hat on and say they're just looking to sell the next issue, but yeah, that's what
that's
comics
part
are
of the
about.
Fucking, yeah, that's part of the thing. Do. It's picking, yeah. You need to pick up the next issue, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think Tinian does some of the best writing for that. Tinian,
right.
To get onto the next issue.
For me, like some of his, whether it be Department of Truth or Something's Killing the Children or, you know, whatever it is, there's always like something at the end that will just make you think, oh, I need to find out where this is going in the next issue.
Then about you guys, I've made my peace with buying issue ones and twos from Small Press because you pretty much know you're not going to get the end of this story.
Yeah, I know.
It's not going to happen. Yeah, I mean, I'm not mad on people putting out issue one over issue one of issue one of like the setups. It's like, you're not where's this story go? Because
in many ways, the setup's an easier thing to write
the setup's
than
really
the,
easy.
The finish. Yeah.
Yeah.
When
it's
you're tying all the loose
sort of
ends,
payoff, yeah,
and the middle bits actually that ain't that easy to write either.
It's kind of like who's that the creator, like director, and they did Lost and stuff, and essentially they're just throwing loads and loads of
Lindelof.
Plot lines into their
is
stuff.
It, is it
right. He some of the he's doing some of the writing on it, and then like there's no payoff for it, and it's like it's really easy just to do setups, but if you bungle the payoffs, what's the point, man? Like it's just not there.
A rumor, or it may be an urban legend, of Scott Lobdell with X-Men was just writing stuff, and like the payoff, he didn't know what the end game was going to be, but he was just putting stuff in there just to keep the ball rolling. I mean,
I put stuff in and also that, not sure where it's going to go, and then it's like it's kind of worked its way out of my head. And thought, well, that's the way it's going to go. Like,
yeah,
I feel like you can't when you're writing. Like when I've written Vanguard, I've stuff like that's going to go in that direction. And as the years and months tick by, I was like, well, that can twist into that. And where I've kind of laid the roots was like, it can change. So to have the story completely locked down with no kind of movement in it, I imagine it'd be quite boring.
The other thing I've noticed is the way that miniseries and limited series are now moving into graphic novels. So this has especially happened with Brubaker and Phillips for me, who, you know, like the hotness at the moment, aren't they? And they're definitely top of their game, putting out two graphic novels a year at the moment. Can you believe that?
That's great.
I mean,
but they started
in terms
off
of comics geos, I think another example of doing it so long for, you know, so well for so long, it's kind of under the radar that they're kind of pretty, it's a legendary
like say,
sort
those,
of like combination, isn't it?
And I think the thing is with them is they started out by doing them as single issues and they come out to trade and all that sort of thing. But now that they're, I think they're seeing more of a benefit by having this is the big event of this 6 months or the summer or whatever it's going to be. Yeah. It's the new Reckless book or something like that. And I think it works better for them, to be fair. I think it's better.
To be fair, it's easier on a kind of a promotion front as well. Because if you're doing single issues, you've got to be promoting that all the fucking time. Whereas if you're putting out a trade every 6 months, all you got to do is like a gargantuan effort twice a year to kind of promote this new product.
From a from a promotions or which is a separate pursuant, a bit of review, is it's easier to review a first book. But if someone sends you, can you review the second book? You're like, I haven't got anything else to say around this because it's the same art, it's the same characters, it's the same package. You know, it has to be an investment in what's happening in the story, and that's something I don't really necessarily want to spoil for readers.
No, you don't want to tell readers that. It's been interesting when it's in like people have to change their art form to kind of have it read and be relevant in that regard. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like I can't do issues. I'm going to have to do a trade because I won't get the necessary press or promotion doing it one way over the other.
Yeah. But I know I've had people who
say,
no,
that's life.
You know, you liked issue one, here's issue two, can you review it? And I'm thinking, I don't know what I'm going to say. Or especially if it's like issue three or four and you've done a couple already. You're like, I've run out of things to say about.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want it to say dispassionate, oh, then this happens, then this happens, then this happens.
Yeah, because how far do you do that? You know, a third of the book, half of the book? You know, you can't talk about what happens in the end. Yeah, because people won't have read issue one because they'll be trade waiting for it.
I think in a longer form tale as well, if you know, if you're trying to attempt the impossible of like a, just say a 40 issue run, you know, even that would be like a mega thing to do in this day and age, especially for small press, maybe not so much the indies, depending on the publisher. It's just the keep changing the flavor of the narrative going forward. If it's the same thing all the time, people are going to be bored by issue 7, Do you know what I mean? Because if the first arc is a certain flavour and it doesn't do anything new with your second narrative arc, why are they going to be invested? What's going to make this story? What's going to keep them hooked for the next 30, you know, 30?
What keeps you guys hooked to an ongoing? For me, it's the characters.
Yeah,
that's what I really. It can be a lot of things, can't it? It can be the art, it can be a lot of things. But for me, I really have to invest in the characters to keep going with it.
I think that's that's a no-brainer. I think for me, you know, to have a character, to follow certain characters, not necessarily follow a whole list, a cast of characters, but certainly one or two you're invested in. I like it as well. This happened to me recently with Something's Killing the Children. There was the first sort of arc that I read, and I know it's an ongoing series, but if it had ended after that first sort of arc, the story, that could have been it and done. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It could have been a nice sort of like, I've had my popcorn, I've had my entertainment, brilliant. And when it started the next one, the world opened up. Do you know what I mean? You started to learn more about the different things that are going on. You know, this society that were hinted at and that they spoke a little bit about in the first one. Now we're seeing a bit more of it. We're drip feeding new characters, new supporting characters. You know, you're being drawn into a bigger world by following the main people. You must always never lose sight of your main characters, because that's probably why people are fans of the book anyway. Do you know what I mean? I think you've got to be careful with that. I think so, because I'm sure we've all created characters and almost become more of a fan of one of the supporting characters than we are the main character, which you need to be careful, you know, if you've created a character to follow through a whole story, they have to be the star of the show, unless you're doing something very ballsy. But yeah, I like it. For me, it's when the story not opens up to the point where I feel like I'm lost in it. And for instance, back to Miller World, I think, you know, during Big Game, there was a lot of this. I didn't really know what was going on, but the world was opening up. It just got bigger and bigger as that series went on.
Yeah, I know. It depends on the series as to why you enjoy it. You know, keep going at it. Yeah. I mean, Big Game for me was a spectacle.
Yeah.
You know, yes. It was the big tent, wasn't it? You know?
Yeah.
While Fight Club, you endear yourself a bit more to the characters going forward in that one. Yeah, it's very much so. I don't necessarily have to like them in any way whatsoever, but I do like to enjoy reading the character. But that's one of the reasons. One of the reasons somebody like Wolverine or Spider-Man or Batman is so popular, isn't it? You know, it's people enjoy reading that character.
Yeah. What about you, Dan? What do you like?
I think it's the like once the kind of the art's locked in and solid, it's the skill of the sort of narration and seeing like plot threads, and they know what they're doing with their characters and their story. It's like something interesting going on and it's moving forwards. Do you know what I mean? I would read it an A to B to C story as long as it's told well.
I'm quite happy
it's like, in the execution, isn't it?
Yeah.
Definitely, that's got to be part one, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I've watched so many films of men who have wronged and then go off and get revenge. I always watch those films. As long as they're done well, I'll watch that fucking film.
I've watched so many films about someone turns up to fix the freezer and a lady's clothes fall off.
Different kind of story. But I think there's a strength to knowing how long your narrative should be. An example I have of this that comes to mind is Terry Moore's Parker Girls. Is shorter than some of his other series. It's shorter.
Well, he talks about moving into that space, doesn't he, in the interview with us?
Yeah, yeah.
He says he finds it a much more enjoyable and also sales worthy.
Yeah, exactly. Style, Rachel Rising was a longer series. I mean, Stranger in Paradise.
Went fucking years.
But it's interesting, like. You know, he's almost fitting into that maxi series model.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Also at the Lakes this year, don't forget.
Yeah. That's exciting.
Yeah.
We did mention something about that on the show and ipso facto it happened.
Yeah, it's down to us.
We're not gonna say that we can
take all credit for that.
Yeah, we're gonna make great things happen, but that's what we do every week. There is that I mean, Terry Moore's obviously been doing this for 30 plus years. Yeah. But I think there's a lesson to be learned there for anyone starting that.
But he's got his head screwed on.
Yeah.
Like, you can't go wrong by following.
And also, he's learned from it as well. Mm. Every book is a learning, isn't it? And I think certainly for new creators, don't start with a 40, every, 50, 50
exactly. Issue. Every issue is both a jumping on and a jumping off point. Yeah. Mm. People forget that.
I think if you want to, you know, if you've got these big dreams of, you know, our 40 or 50 issue sort of arc, maybe the ongoing webcomic is where you should be.
But even then, if you look at yourself and think, how many pages can I get done?
Yeah.
In a 6 month period or a year, and say, well, I could get 2 issues done a year, and you're like, well, I'm going to do a 20 issue run. So that's fucking a lot of years.
Yeah. Be bored of it by the end of that one.
Yeah. So be careful.
Well, so that's an interesting segue into my one, which I was going to mention. Shall I mention mine now?
Yeah, go for it.
So we've been racking our brains about sort of what would be a good example of this. And I think this is not the best example of the format, but an interesting example for a number of other reasons, which I'll ask you about, is the Mage series of books. So 3 15-issue maxi series. The first one came out, get this, from Kimiko, the long-dead Kimiko, in 1984. Mm-hmm. The second one came out in 1997, and the third one came out in 2019. Now, they're named The Hero Discovered, the first one, The Hero Defined, which is the one in the 90s, and The Hero Denied, which is the recent closing of the character, the Mage character, Matchstick character.
Yes, Kevin Matchstick, isn't it?
That's him. So it is, for those who haven't read it, I'd highly recommend it. It's a sort of modern retelling of the Arthurian myth in a very loose way. Mm. He's a sort of bit of a sort of loser who discovers he's, you know, Arthur essentially, and he has a glowing baseball bat, you know, Excalibur kind of thing. And there's a team of people and villains and heroes and assistants and wives and daughters and everyone around him. But it tells the story, and he's had an extremely long eye on this. That is literally decades of a rolling out of the story, which I find it absolutely both interesting, and I'm obsessed with his staying power on it. I think listening to him, he would have put it out slightly quicker. But if you read it, you also get a really interesting period of his life, in his creativity life, in his artistic life. You get the new stuff has a roughness to it, I'll be honest with you. It's not as polished. You get the stuff in the 90s, which is a bit more flash, a bit more splash in the pan, you know, flash in the pan, a bit more, for want of a better word, image comics. And the last one is like he's lost all of his hair in the last one. He's a dad. He's fighting for his family. You know, and not only do they reflect where he is artistically, but they also reflect where he is in his own life, which I think is just fascinating to look at. But he's had this plan of these three series that he would roll out and create these, you know, they're three great hardbacks that sit on my shelf now. I bought all the issues as they were coming out over the period. I mean, this goes to show the first book when it was coming out, I just discovered a local comic book shop and I was buying the comics from there. And I actually had the Mage symbol drawn on my school bag. I had all magic is green written in an exercise book, you know, this sort of thing. And then here I am in my 50s reading the last, you know, it's almost like contemporarily between us. He's brought it out and I've aged with him with the book. And I think that's an incredible way to do it. I just really admire that. He's done lots of other stuff. He's done The Shadow and Batman and Grendel, and, you know, he's done lots of other stuff.
The first book this weekend, I bought Russell. I hadn't realized. And I read the first one of Hero Discovered. It's really interesting. It's great. It's really of its time, isn't it? Like, everything about it.
That's the stuff where he's in the cell and all that sort of thing.
That's the one.
He gets punched in the gut because he thinks he's suddenly got these powers. You know, it's almost like the brashness of and the uncertainty of youth all in one go.
Mm.
And he discovers that, you know, he's Gawain and, you know, he's Merlin and this sort of thing. And
yeah, it's lots of fun. I kind of knew that the conceit behind it being that it's like King Arthur and stuff, so I was like, oh, this guy's got to be Merlin then. And it's fun. I enjoyed it. I'm gonna keep on reading.
It's a lot more slick when you get to the final book.
Yes, I'd imagine.
It doesn't tell quite a bigger story, I find, in the last one. It's a bit honed down, but And the middle book is much more colourful. It's got he introduces all these other characters with powers and stuff into it. It's a very you know reflective of the times it was. You know, with the 80s. You know, times. You know, when we were all thinking about, oh, this is 1984. Suddenly, you know, this is Orwellian. You know, the Orwellian world. Then you got the sort of cocaine. Not saying that he's on cocaine, but you got this sort of the brashness of the cocaine movies and the image revolution and all this sort of thing going on in the 90s. And then we've got almost like, this, I mean, it came out, you know, just before COVID, you know, stuff like that. It's that different period in the world. Yeah, absolutely. Like I say, totally fascinating. I find it very, very interesting to read, and it's a great read. I recommend it to anyone. There you go. But as a limited series, that's a hell of a fucking achievement, isn't it?
Yeah,
Along with something
God,
like Cerebus. You know, Cerebus, we said I'm going to do 300 issues, and everyone went, "What? Like an indie comic writer is going to do 300 issues?" You know. Yeah, interesting. There you
blitz
go.
through it.
Excellent.
I chose the wrong title, didn't I? So I kind of had to pivot and read some of Mage.
But I think when it comes to some of the when we talk about longer form telling, especially with indie comics, you harken back to like the real classics, I think, the ones that are like the evergreen on the bookshelves. Like you talk about like Jeff Smith's Bone. Do you know what I mean? That was a
It's a good one.
that was a you know, you can get that in one nice thick book now. It's a beautiful read. But that was certainly that just kept ticking on, didn't it? It just kept going. Telling a narrative, which I think, and also it's an evergreen sort of book. It will always be in the bookstores, won't it?
Well,
There's
his
another.
follow up to it is almost kind of been forgotten a bit, Rassel, isn't it? It's
Yeah,
almost
yeah, yeah. I've
we've
got that on
forgotten
my
about that
shelf.
one now.
Yeah, thanks to you, Toby. I've
Yeah,
got that on my
oh,
shelf.
nice
Sat
one.
next to
Yeah,
it.
that was a perennially in Wizard, wasn't it? Bone.
Bone.
They
Yeah,
always,
yeah, yeah. But I think,
God bless them.
you know, a lot of the ones that we're talking about in this particular sort of thing were, I think that sort of wizard boom, the ones that always come to my mind are usually like the weird indie ones that we saw in those sort of back pages, like a Strangers in Paradise or, you know, a Bone or you talk Cerebus. You know, the reason I know these names is because they kept going for so long and they became legendary. I think it's so much harder now to do that because of like, you know, short attention spans, you know, where
Sin City was a bit like that. I think we ignore Sin City occasionally,
Oh,
although
yeah.
you know it has its roots in noir and movies more than it does in
Yeah.
comics. But it told little short stories that fitted into this bigger overarching theme, didn't it?
Oh,
I
yeah,
love
totally.
how the Marv story was like present in a lot of them, and they'd bump into Marv at some point on in his story. That was I loved when that happened because
I
they
like that.
like there was like a timeline, and suddenly they bled into one another and then came out again.
I mean,
But
I think, you know, that was a classic version of like, you know, the mini series taking on like different arcs, you know, following that. And, you know, much like you said about Hellboy, it was the Dark Horse model, if I can call it that, because it felt like Dark Horse was doing that, weren't they? They were.
back then, I mean, don't forget that didn't Sin City spin out of Dark Horse
It
Presents?
did,
Yeah, so they almost were having a testing ground for these stories again, which is another little step to take, isn't it, in producing something that they know is going to sell
Wasn't
before
that
putting it
was
into a limited run.
supposed to be in four and it went to five with Dark with Sin City? I think it was supposed to be a certain amount of issues, and like Frank just kept on producing more. So it's like, oh, I've got to do five instead of four.
Ronin's another great one. The Miller book. You know, because that was the kind of the early days for that sort of limited run type thing, around, you know, around the Watchmen time and stuff. Ronin's an amazing achievement. We were talking the other night on the Drink and Draw about Frank's best art, and I think it was Kieran was saying Daredevil, and I kind of thinking, yeah, do you know what? I don't know if I agree with him or not, but I kind of think I do. And what afterwards, I was driving this morning, and I thought, Ronin, I actually think I'd prefer that.
Okay. Do you
You know,
just think that out of nowhere? Just, Ronan.
crash the car. But the yeah, he's an interesting one. He does do that. Frank's kind of born a little bit to do that, isn't he, when you think about it, all the stuff he's done.
We were saying his artwork's kind of got a bit better for me, at least recently. He seems to have kind of, because it went to a period where I was like, I'm not really liking this lot
Man,
for
I
me.
loved the wonkiness. I don't know. I know not
Yeah,
everyone
it's not
did.
for me.
You know, there's some
No, not
people
yet.
would almost take the piss out of some of the stuff, but some of the wonkiness, I just like.
Yeah, fair play.
Just it was
It's
crack to me.
subjective, isn't it, art? So,
Always. I can see why perhaps people could say his eye's not quite in anymore, but.
Yeah, but like he did that Darth Maul one, and it was like this seems more kind of accomplished than some of the stuff he's putting out 6 months to a year ago.
Yeah. Anyway, go to Dublin and see him if you want.
Yeah. Here's a question for you. In terms of like longer form storytelling, especially with indie publishers, let's take it on an issue by issue basis. You know, we're talking longer form individual issues. Do you think one of the only ways of doing that successfully and keep it ongoing with an indie publisher is to work on a license? Now, I'm thinking now of, you know, Turtles, Transformers, you know, all of these sort of things that aren't with the big companies, but they're publishing comics through, you know, IDW, independent publishers, whoever. But Turtles, for instance, that had an enormous, and Transformers before that, I know Transformers has since moved on, but they had enormous ongoing runs, didn't they?
Yeah, the Turtles is 100 and something, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think? I don't know. I think it depends on that. And the only reason I say that, I know we're talking about Dynamite a minute ago, is I think kind of their model with their IP stuff is, for example, Elvira, is they do 5-issue runs of it. They almost drop that Hellboy model. But if you read them, they actually do refer in and out of each other, you know, backwards and forwards to the stories. So it may as well be an ongoing.
It always feels like it's a bit of a one hand on the ripcord kind of thing. And it's like, oh, fuck, sales are plummeting out. But we've got to pull the ripcord and call it a day on this. Whereas
reboot,
you know, the five, the miniseries, like miniseries, if it ever starts fucking falling, the arse starts falling out of it, you can just like, oh, this is the last one, and not going to do any more after this.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's paying, I'll just do another one.
I mean, there's the famous drop-off after issue one, isn't there? There's always that famous drop-off that goes on. And I think I was reading something the other day that said it's only getting worse. Depending on the issues.
The trouble is they kind of keep going to do more issue ones because that's what pays better. And then that's like going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy because they know after a couple of issues, you're going to reboot it again anyway. But then surely the readers and consumers are going to get wise to that. It's like, are you always doing fucking issue ones? Like
Marvel did it the other. Marvel doing it all the time. The Scarlet Witch series clearly didn't sell. Next thing you know, the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver's come out. Who's talked their editorial into doing that? We know it's not going to sell. Like She-Hulk didn't sell, so they literally changed it to the Savage She-Hulk.
But then there's
and it
no,
came out 2 months later. We know
no
it's not going to sell.
Yeah. On creative team or direction,
very little. Very little.
We're just going to change it. Kind of the title slightly and slightly shift it, but it's the same stuff. If it wasn't selling before, how's it going to sell again?
It's like Iceman, it sold fucking terribly.
Yeah.
So what do? They leave it 6 months and bring it out again. You're like, you know, it's not going to sell. What are you doing?
Yeah. It's that old saying, man. The maxim that often misquoted is like, the customer's always right. If no one's buying the fucking product, the customer's right because. It's your product. It's not right.
If you think that, then don't go and read Tom Brevoort's weekly blog.
Oh, mate, he's terrible. We can get onto that later on.
Right.
Well, we can get into that now if you want. That ties into me.
Yeah, we'll just finish this. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed this topic. I love talking about like narratives and how things should be structured and stuff. And I think it's, you know, been nice sort of delving into the past as well as what people could possibly do for the future. Obviously, that's kind of our thoughts on it, but certainly, please let us know on the Slack. We have a great Slack community. If you want to be part of it, get in touch with us, join it. There's loads of different channels and groups on there. There's an ongoing podcast discussion one, which I always love checking out to see what people think of, like, you know, or put their own takes on what we talk about. And this is a particularly good one, I think. So, you know, what do you prefer to
be
read
loads
out
missed.
There? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Completely.
I mean, I'd love to hear, like, if you're going to give advice to someone who's starting a new comic, like, I want to start a comic, what would you give them? Say, a mini series, a maxi series, a one shot?
Yeah.
What would your approach to sort of like?
The options are much more open to you these days. You know, everything from webcomic to anthology to graphic novel to series to, you know, there's all different options on there now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think because we've got so many
Instagram
options, you wouldn't have so many people saying, I've got an idea for like a 100 issue epic. But if there are those people, what would you tell them to do? And certainly let us know what sort of narratives do you prefer to read in comics? Because you might only have time for miniseries instead of like being invested in a in a longer
I got a
story.
Letter from someone the other day, and he was saying, it said, I'm thinking about doing a 100-issue series about my superhero characters. Apologies about the crayon. They won't let us have anything sharp in here.
Yeah, and then they took my crayons away. Anyway, yes, but let us know in the sort of comments or whatever, and keep the discussion going. We've got another discussion now that's going to feed into this. One that Dan has been, he's been chomping at the bit to talk about. Dan, do you want to lead us in?
So obviously I'm going to be kind of relatively ignorant on this because I've not read much of the Krakoa stuff, but they're kind of relaunching it, aren't they, with free titles.
The X-Men. X-Men.
There's more to come, I think, but they're here in the initial three.
And there's going to be expanded into absolutely reams of them. But one of the things, like, they did that motion video bit, and they said, oh, like, they're hated and feared. And one of the things with the X-Men for me was it tapped into that kind of societal thing where you kind of feared the other, and the X-Men were representative of, like, racial issues or sexual issues, or kind of they were kind of subjugated and feared and hated for what they were. Yeah. And it always played on that. And even though the X-Men were like heroes and trying, like, they're not every mutant was a good guy, but there was, like, they were trying to kind of do the best thing and trying to get humanity and mutants to coexist.
The tagline was, like, you know, they're trying to protect a world that fears and hates them, isn't it? That's
But going forward after Krakoa, any fear and hatred they've got is entirely justified, because they set up like this nation state that was kind of exclusory, like only mutants are allowed in there. They developed cures to diseases. They would jump into other people's countries unbidden and pretty much do whatever they want. And they were essentially saying, like, we're their council and members of people who were on that island were like mass murderers and killers, and absolutely sort of.
That's one of the ways that Orcus catches them, though, isn't it? Because they had the, you know, they were using Krakoa to like literally sort of grow things that would be treat cancer, for example, or something.
Yeah.
But Orcus, which is the organization that brought them down in the fall, you know, is part of the fall of them at the moment. It's sort of the ongoing story at the moment. They put poison and a timer in the vaccines and stuff they were sending out that kill people.
Yeah.
So Krakoa is now a no man's land. There's a little bit of a story going on at the moment about people, Sabretooth and some other people, breaching it and trying to find something. But they're now hunted. So they are now hunted and trying to, there's some on Mars, there's some, you know, living in the sewers, there's some who are hiding in the Hellfire Club. Fisk.
And that hatred, like that fear, is from the human point of view, I would say that's entirely justified, because you're making this nation state that is quite happily in harboring like mass murderers and killers because of their identity. And you can only see that going one way. At some point, they're kind of the homo superior. At some point, that homo sapiens and the mutants are going to come head to head, and only one of them's going to be standing. And if I was going to put money on it, it's going to be the mutant, surely.
See,
well, I'm very much, sorry to interrupt, but I think I'm very much, again, from what we talked about earlier, is in the execution of it. Yeah. And I read all the X books, and some of them are great. Genuinely, some of them are really good. And some of them have, including Invincible Iron Man at the moment, which is part of that because he's married Emma in that book. But they're tackling it. The Jerry Duggans and the Ben Percys of this world are tackling it in a really interesting way.
Okay.
And it's this sort of ongoing catastrophe. You feel this like heavy catastrophe on them. And it's being dealt with. But some of the other books are like, are honestly not very good. I'm not a massive fan of Gillen's writing, for example. But I think Percy and Duggan, to me, are the two that are holding up. Wolverine's exceptionally good at the moment.
Okay.
But
I say, because I prefer a complete ignorance here.
But that's fine, man. But where I'm going with this is we don't need a reboot. We don't need some big, massive paintbrush that paints everything out and starts new.
Yeah.
It's again what we said earlier, that the X-Men are a soap opera. dealt with right. We've got all these different players involved, and it's going on and on, and there's all these different things happening. And as long as you've got a strong editor or showrunner, whatever they want to call it now these days in comics, who can bring all these threads together, then it doesn't need this massive brash reboot. I don't know why they're doing it. Maybe Duggan and Percy are leaving. I don't know, but I know obviously Hickman has left. Maybe yeah. They think they need this. They need to bring in Gail Simone, who I'll be honest with you, I haven't seen any evidence that she's got the chops to bring together a whole, you know, she's written a few fairly fun comics, but I've never seen her having the chops to bring in, bring together a whole line of books.
She get like hired to do something for Lionforge and it didn't really go anywhere.
That's the story I've heard. Yeah. I don't know what happened to Lionforge, to be fair. I mean, I read Birds of Prey and the Secret Six and stuff, and I enjoyed I enjoyed it. But
what was that? Like, you're talking...
That's a while ago, yeah.
Yeah, it seems an odd choice to go to a creator who's kind of been out of it for so long and not really kind of done anything of note in that time and say, right, they're going to
maybe
be
she's come in with a big pitch, I don't know, and said, look, this is what I can do. But to be fair, I'm peaks and troughs with the X-Men guys, you know I am. I think I put a diatribe in the Slack about it. You know, I've bought X-Men books since I could read. And I've never stopped, and I've always read them. And I'm in picks and troughs with how much I enjoy them. There was some recent, before the Krakoa stuff, the run on it was terrible back then. And I'm not loving Ewing's work at Marvel at the moment either. But I think there's some real high points. I think X-Force Wolverine, the main X title comes and goes a little bit. But there's some real high points in the X-Universe. It's a shame. It's almost like I don't know why I'm buying it at the moment, because it's just in this sort of death rattle where I think, well, this is all going to change. You know, Dark X-Men, for example, I've read that. I'm thinking, well, it's all going to go away, isn't it? You know, what are they going to do with all this lot? You know, going to go away, and we're going to get these three stupid teams set up, and I don't really know why. But the story of, like, Emma and Wolverine and Cyclops and Professor and all these sort of people, it's really interesting to me at the moment.
Right, okay, interesting. It'll be interesting to see how they play it out then.
Yeah, because... I hope they do something decent with it. We just had, for people that don't know, we just had a bit of a technical error, and in the middle of that, we were moaning about the negativity in Tom Brevoort's mailer. I don't know where the passion is for it, man, at the moment.
No, but this kind of thing is, grip for it is, if you're kind of saying, "Oh, no one's talking about this, no one's interested in it," it's like, well, what do you take from that then? You saying, "Oh, it's that old Skinner meme from Simpsons." It's like, perhaps I am out of touch. No, it's the children that are wrong. It's you know what I mean.
I want to play devil's advocate here as well on this, because I haven't. X-Men used to be one of my favourites back in the day. Always got a soft spot for them. I haven't read them for a very very long time. I think I read a couple of issues at the beginning of Hickman's Krakoa.
Yeah, same.
That one, and it was very very impressive. Listening to, you know, what you guys have said about the story is the first I've heard about it. Sounds big, epic, dark. Also something that I wouldn't have a fucking Scooby-Doo what's going on if I picked up an issue of it. But is there something that, I mean, it could be a success, it could not. That's not what I'm talking about here. But I'm talking about, is there something to be said for, if they want to get people back into the X-Men, to have that reboot, and never mind about the teams or anything like that, but to have that, okay, if you want to jump back into the X-Men, but you've been scared to do it because you didn't know what on earth was going on, here is where you can jump back. You know? That's possibly the reason for, like, rebooting titles like this. Yeah. I mean, certainly when I see when I saw the animated advert that you were talking about, Dan, I had sort of no problem with it. I was just thinking, it feels like here's going back to the status quo.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm probably not going to buy it, but, you know, if I wanted to get back into the X-Men, problems, etc. But it needs to have a status quo again, doesn't it? Which means...
Yeah.
But I think the problem with that is getting that status quo after such a dark and epic story.
Yeah, I was going to say, my thing is, how do you get back to that? How do you get back to a kind of status quo when
I'd love to be able to go, you know, I mean, it was one of those things that, like, back in the day, like when the all new X-Men came out, do you remember that, like the Bendis and Immonen one? I picked that up and thought, oh, fucking great, just a fun X-Men book that I can just read. I don't need, you know, I can just enjoy it for what it is. That would be wonderful. But it's also the problem, you can't have that with everything
the massive problem I think they've got is they've got big sellers. They've got a number of big sellers that probably pay for a lot of the small, you know, the smaller titles. So they can't. The ideal would be two X-Men books.
Yeah.
Do two X-Men books. Awesome. But what they do is, no, they can't do that. They've got to have three X-Men books. We'll probably get an X-Force. We'll probably get a Storm book. We'll probably get a Wolverine book. We're going to get all these books again. That many stories just fucks up the reasons.
Exactly. All you need is Uncanny and X-Men. That's all you need. I mean, we call it the blue and gold. That's how I feel it in my heart, you know, back to those 90s days. But that was all you needed. Uncanny. And also, Extraordinary X-Men is a terrible title. I do not like that title. Oh, God.
Yeah, it's using the X twice. It's alliterative nonsense.
Yeah. Rob T, we're going to have to kind of like, you give us your thoughts as it goes along. Cause
I'm going to read it, man. You know,
we said maybe we're dipping on those first and see what it's like, but I don't know. It doesn't feel like a kind of a reboot or sort of like, oh, look, you can get back in from the ground up on this, for me.
How about this? Here's a crazy one. If we want,
well, it's three of us and there's three issues.
There's three issues and there's three of us. So why don't we tackle one each in the future?
All right, let's do
it.
When's it happening?
Yeah. I don't know, to be fair.
Okay.
That's how excited he is.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I know it'll be in my pool at least. Yeah, you know,
you'll have all three. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. But, sounds good. Sounds like a plan.
Cool.
Yeah. And to be fair, about 2 weeks ago, just before the announcement came out, I emailed Gosh with a sort of a couple of change ups in my pool list, and I said, you know, what's the score with the X-Men books? Do we know how many we're getting? So they said we ain't got a clue.
They got Scooby-Doo.
So they find out when, I suppose, the announcement was made, and then it finds it. Yeah. So I don't know. But, you know, not as if the company treats their fucking retailers who sell their comics to them like shit, but there you go. Yeah.
Nice. But
so that's that one done.
One. We've got that off our chest and possibly organised an episode for the future.
And a revolution.
Yeah. We are the revolution.
Yeah. Wolfie Smith, tooting popular front.
Evolve, but I don't revolve.
Yeah. The only revolving I do is on my chair, which I'm not going to do now because I've currently got my headphones plugged in, so I'll choke myself to death.
Reverse cowgirl.
I was about to do a terrible segue into the next section, but I'm not going to do that. So I'm just going to say, do we have any shout outs, gents?
I know we've got another subject, haven't we?
Have we?
Yeah, the one I said about the two things have happened online this week. Do you remember?
Oh, yes, right, okay.
Yeah. So, no, and honestly, this is just an open question. I posed it on the drink and draw, and literally no shade whatsoever in relation to the two suggestions. But twice this week it's come up in two different places that we should have some kind of organized list, index, yellow pages, whatever you want to call it, of comic creators in the UK. If not, perhaps beyond. It's coming from a Comic Scene Project, which I think is upcoming, and it also came in as the minutes from the meeting of the Comics Cultural Impact Collective. Now, I've got my own feelings about this, but I wanted to ask you two guys, and you haven't told me in advance, just how would you feel about being on that list, and how would you describe yourself? If you did do it,
I'm a Gemini. I like long walks on the beach. Right, Dan, do you want to go first?
I kind of feel maybe being on a list like that might be a little bit redundant nowadays. I mean, the purpose of these lists, say back in the day, would be to kind of like find. Right, I want to find an artist, and we've got like all these artists I can pick from. But now you've got the entire world. Like on the biggest database known to mankind, which is the net. And if I'm kind of like,
that was a point that was made in the drink and draw as well.
If I'm soliciting work, I can get someone from the other side of the globe who's absolutely an amazing artist.
Is this a UK-based thing we're talking about here?
Well, the two people who've suggested it are from the UK,
okay.
But I'm not sure whether it would be more than that. I don't know.
Okay. I don't see.
I haven't read into it enough.
I don't see what the benefit would be, honestly, okay. Because that list would have to be so inclusive, and every single publisher know about it and want to use it accordingly. Yeah.
When you think about, for example, not connected, but Searchlight, which is a friend of mine works for a voice acting. An audio play company, and they use what's something called Searchlight, which is a actors index, which I know used to be a hard copy, but I'm guessing is online now. And people get work out of that.
I mean, it could entirely work and be, I just don't see how it could.
The way I see it, whenever I hear these sort of lists, etc., it is this may be a cheap way to look at it. It's like when I get a Denton's directory through the through my post that tells me where all my local plumbers and the people who go fix my gutters, etc. It's essentially that. Basically a professional's list. If I want some sort of thing, I'll go to that person, right? So this will be no different to any kind of thing like that. I can see the benefits in the ways of if people want a one-stop shop to have a look at and have a browse at who's available for hire,
maybe
work.
An example of their work on there,
and that's what I'm getting to. If you're an artist going to put it on there, is this an online only thing? Is this something that is going to be have your name and then a link to all your relevant details?
Yeah,
it's the sort of thing that if it was in print feels fairly pointless to me. Feels very redundant. This is something that would work better if it was online and it had active links where you could see a name, click on. I mean, it's much like...
What, like a little traffic light that says whether you're looking for work or not, I guess?
Completely. I mean, this is the sort of thing that forums and all these kind of things have been doing for years anyway. Like, how many times have people gone on to all kinds of forums say, I'm looking for an artist, show us your portfolio kind of thing, you know, that you see all these listings. Is it spider web or there used to be or something like that? There was all these different types, but if it's UK centric, it's got to be interactive, especially with artists or, you know, or certainly writers, that which means that these creators, they've got to have some sort of online portfolio, whether it be writing or whether it be anything.
What's
like
the relevance of them just being the UK based?
I don't know whether that's the case. I don't know. But I know that the two organisations are UK organisations.
Okay. I think if it's UK based, it's better to have a more concentrated, okay, I want to work with someone from the UK. Because like you say, if you're going worldwide, then it makes it irrelevant in some point. There's no point to it. It has a point if it's a concentrated, here is a database, which is what it is, isn't it? We call it directory, but essentially it's a database of creators. Now, having said that, so I can see where it could be useful for people like short, you know, who just want to check out and try and work with different people that they haven't seen before. Having said that, being someone that for the most part is a one-man band, you know, do it all myself, etc., blah 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 blah, I wouldn't put myself forward for it, because I'm kind of more interested in doing stuff for myself.
Yeah.
And Dan, I predict that probably you'd be the same, because you're doing your own work and that's more fulfilling you. It's not necessarily...
I don't mind jumping on little projects and stuff, but essentially, yeah.
But I think the little projects come from other places. I think this is exactly. directly for people.
They come from me and you and everyone and you and Kieran and... Damien and PXD and all these sort of people just cliffing and chatting and doing
but if
stuff.
If you're an artist who's sort of in a bubble, you know, doesn't listen to this podcast, isn't part of the community, doesn't know anything, something like this might be quite handy just to put your calling card out there. You know, I'm available for work.
I think what does competition do? You know, in a free market, competition in this, I would think maybe initially, especially if you're, so say for example, for example, I put a bit of work your way recently, haven't I, Vince? Just a mate of mine says, "Oh, do you know any graphic designers?" So, I know a couple of good guys. I'll speak to one, and you got some work like that. However, if all the graphic designers were on it, and I sent him a link to all these graphic designers, what's a newbie going to do? What's an outsider going to do?
Yeah,
go the cheapest one.
Yeah,
yeah.
So it would have driven down the price that people were offering. Now,
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing, because I think sometimes that's how free market
That's how it
works.
works.
But for people who are just, and then who else is going to be on there? And this is the touchstone for everything at the moment in all kind of online conversations. There's going to be AI people.
Yeah, it's going to be grifters.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
You can, like, when someone, you say, Tony, I know a couple of people, you hook up Vince, you got to, like, tried and trusted,
Yeah, I
like,
know I can
yeah,
rely on him. I know
that'll
my
work.
reputation
I'm
is
definitely a human
sound.
being. Yeah.
But do you know what I mean? It
Yeah.
you'd have to it's same with it looking in any directory. It's the same at looking at any menu, isn't it? You would have to like be careful, check what's going on. And I think you're right, Vince, having those links on there,
Yeah.
I think would be a helpful
But
thing to
I
look.
also think that one of the another wrinkle to this kind of stuff, and to take it back to that comparison to, like, those professional tradesmen thing, because that's what this is essentially. It's just
Yeah.
treated like that. You yes, you're an artist, but you're a tradesman. That's what these directories are useful for. Whenever you get someone to fix your fence, or if you know, you want to have that little flash saying, you know, a professional organization has said, by the way, these have all been check a trade, these are all okay, they're legit.
Legit.
You can't be part of this directory unless you're that. That's another thing that this directory has to do.
Yeah, but
Are
what
they
do you
going to do
do? Do you
that?
have a quality control then? And
Exactly. Yeah.
who decides what's good and what's bad, who's allowed on there, who's not?
Yeah.
Unless you just have it so that everyone can put on there. And then
Yeah.
what do you say? Do you say like no AI, which to me seems sensible, but
Yeah.
then you say, well, what if he's using AI just in the background? Do
Yeah.
you let them? Do you know, it's like it's a
And
really
also,
unusual thing. It
if
needs a
they
lot of
say, yeah.
catering, you
Yeah,
know.
and if they say, "Oh yeah, it's all completely checked," and someone comes through and it sneaks through, then
Who's culpable?
you're completely, you'll just get ripped apart online.
Yeah.
You need to
Yeah.
be very
But
careful.
like you said, Vince, if you ask, like, who's not in the bubble that wouldn't use this directory? Do you know what I mean? It's not like Mavis is sitting at home saying, "Oh, I need a comic artist."
Yeah.
Like, it's not like I need a plumber or I need a someone to look at the central heating. Like, if you're looking for a comic artist, surely you're going to have your thumb in the
Yeah,
pie
most
already.
of us will be people who know about comics in
Yeah.
some element. Or it's just what you've got is that odd one. You know, there's like if someone says, "Oh, I'm looking for," I'll Google that. Oh, there's this directory. Oh, who's the cheapest? Oh, I'll use him. Oh, that's not very good. You know,
Yeah.
the way it's.
And also, from an
Again,
art
that.
from artist's perspective as well, we all
What's.
know, you know, a lot of people, they're not doing this as a full-time job, or, like, you know, art doesn't really pay that, you know. Do you know what I mean? So if they're going to have to pay to be part of this directory, they've got to be guaranteed some form of workflow.
Deadline by a month or money returned. You know, it's
Yeah.
oh God, it's a
What's the
headache.
read?
I mean, God bless them for putting it together. And I think
Totally.
you know,
Yeah.
like give it
It
a
could
go
be
if you're going
very
to do it. Yeah,
useful. It
but
could
I
be very
think
useful.
it needs a lot of curating. It really does. I think you really need to be very careful. And once you stop being overly careful about who you let in and who you don't, then it becomes can become gatekeeping, and you've got
Yeah,
to be
you've gone
careful.
too far. It's such a thin line to kind of tread. And once if they see
You know
some
what some
people.
people are like? Somebody say, like, "Oh, he voted for Trump. We don't want him in," and
Yeah.
stuff like that. And oh, he's not a vegetarian. We don't want him in. And you know this sort of thing. And suddenly, it starts becoming an argument in an empty room amongst
Yeah,
people. You know.
yeah, yeah. I mean, if a like a creator is on there, who whatever type of creator there is, and they're on there, and they keep getting work, but they're not fulfilling it, or they're failing it, you know, over and over, then they should go. Do you
But
know
you
what I mean?
watch that become. Just people slagging each other off,
Yes,
isn't it?
yeah.
Because
Someone's
no
got
one
to
can
become an
accept it's
arbiter
their
of that.
fault for things, can they anymore? You know.
And that's the thing. Like, sometimes when it comes to being professional, it's more a case of doing rather than saying. Do you know
Yeah,
what I mean?
but I think what we've done there, the evidence of what we've done there is we've worked through the worst possible scenarios, which, let's face it, Murphy's Law say will quite possibly happen at some point
Yeah.
or other if
Yeah.
this is a successful model. I think from my own point of view, I posed it to you two, didn't I? I think it doesn't follow my interests to be part of anything like that, because we work, myself and Falpy work in the underground
Yeah.
model. We are
Yeah.
underground creators. We
Yeah.
don't ever want to be part of anything. It's
Yeah.
the old Groucho Marx line, isn't it? You know, we don't want to be part of that. Because we're working as a, out, the point is we make outsider art.
Yeah. But yeah, but there's lots of these, and I think all three of us, we're making music that we want to dance to, sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? But there's a lot of creators out there who you know, they're making their comics, but also they want to, they do want to strive on. They do want to work for these bigger publishers, or they do want to do something like that. In order to do that, you got to get the work so it can be seen. So it could be, you know, it could be very useful.
See, right? I'm not sure if you'd get it through this kind of directory. I don't know.
Well, you know,
it doesn't seem like the industry doesn't seem like it's such a weird niche industry that it's just. I don't know. I wish it would work. I hope it would.
Yeah,
but
I mean, hope with something like this, you know, whoever signs up for it, you got to keep shouting about it all the time. That this resource of
it's got to be an ever present thing.
Rather than a marketing ploy, this should be seen as a resource that's going to be really.
And if it works, it's the democratization of it. And I think it stops people going, "Oh, he only got that job on that because he's mates with the editor." And there's a lot of bitterness around that all the time, isn't it, out there? And we've seen it ourselves. You know, we've just moaned about Kel Simone getting a job, and I'm sure, I've got no doubt in my mind, it's because she's mates with a couple of the editors there.
Yeah,
you know, she may do a good job, but she may not. But you know, that's the way it has always worked. I get people to work on my comics, and I pay people to work on my comics who I've known and I trust and I like and
do a good job.
A good job, and that's how it works.
I've worked with people who haven't done a good job, and I don't recommend them to anyone else.
Exactly. Like, yeah.
So
check a trader.com.
Yeah. Checkacomicartist.com. Some shit.
I must say, you know, things that are always fascinating to me. We're always on the lookout. You know, we're going to keep our eyes on this, you know, see what it's like. And obviously, you lovely people, a lot of people listen to this, are creators yourselves. So, you know, please let us know, you know, if you take part in it. Let us know the pros, the cons, or whatever. You know, because it's all about being informed. I don't think we can't. You know, we're not going to stand there and go, "Well, this is a terrible idea," because it's not. This could be really. Well,
and also, if you're the people who are doing this, you know, they're looking to start this or have started it already. I think the comic scene one has run a bit, isn't it?
Yeah.
Then you know, let us know what you know what you think about it, and we'll you know have a chat with you or put it out. You know, give it a pimp for you and everything.
It,
Yeah. We're not taking sides at all. That's the point of our podcast. We don't take sides at all. Yeah. So it's sort of, you know. Good, interesting one, guys. Sensibly discussed, as always. Good and bad sides.
Yeah, we're always sensible on this show.
Well, that's not true, is it?
Knob jokes coming up.
Knob jokes, But before that, there's a shout-outs. Do we have any shout-outs, gents?
Yeah, I got a couple. So the new Over Heel book, Infinite Wheat Paste, Volume 1, is currently on Kickstarter. Could do with a bit of a kick. Go and have a look at it. Ariel ever reliable, aren't they? And Kat sent it through to us to have a read. So, no brain, it's my buddy, Neve Jones, is chatting to the cartoonists of the new graphic novel. Her name is Hannah Armali at the Cartoon Museum, and it's the tickets for that are on sale. It's on the 7th of April at 1 p.m. Go along. Neve's funny. You like her. She's good company. I think that's all just... Oh, yeah. Batman, Dylan, Dog. The amount of people have read it and said to me, "Fuck me, this book's good." I got a text message from Al Henderson yesterday saying, "Jesus, this is good," you know. So get on it, guys. Have you read it yet, you two?
No.
Batman, Dylan, Dog, man. It's the best thing out there at the moment. Wow. Talk about a couple of Italian dudes who know how to write Batman. They got it down. Yeah.
Wow. Nice. Dan, what shout-outs have you got?
I've got Steamroller Man, an absurdly funny superhero adventure by Matthew Schofield. Being a hero really has gone to his head. A retro-flavored superhero comedy written and drawn by Simpsons director Matthew Schofield. That's coming soon to Kickstarter. Go check that one out. We've got My Nervous Breakdown. I didn't mean to laugh before I said that. A stunningly illustrated book detailed the journey throughout my mental health crisis. And that's by Stuart Lloyd Gould. And that's currently Kickstarter. We've got another 6 days when you hear this. I've also given a shout out. We've not mentioned it in a little while, but the acprecommends.com.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll put it on the tweets this week as well. Yeah.
And that's curated by Ray Shields. And essentially, it's a highlight to all the books we've talked about on the show. And you can click on the links and go check them out and purchase them for yourselves.
And if you go on it and you click on the other page, there's a couple of pages on that site, you can see all of Craig's skills and hire him.
Bow staff skills. Ninja skills. Yeah. Napoleon Dynamite reference there.
The best. Your mother goes to college. I saw a band once who are called Your Mother Goes to College off the back of that.
That's great.
Yeah.
Spent in my uncle in Alaska hunting wolverines.
Yeah. What do you use to hunt them with? Duh, 12 gauge.
Okay.
I bet you I can throw a football over those mountains.
I still sometimes watch that bit with the time machine and
Yeah.
fucking die.
Who's that going?
I like the bit with is it Latoya? Who's his wife he marries?
I think it's LaFonda.
LaFonda,
LaFonda.
and he's
Yeah.
chatting to her, and when he's chatting, he's
Yeah.
reading it out as he's
Yeah.
typing to her
You're
in the
just
chat
jealous
room.
because I'm chatting to hot
I'm like...
babes all day. It is still a classic, and it still
Yeah.
holds up 20 years later. Fucking
It's a real
legend.
kind of Marmite film, that though. Some people fucking
Yeah.
hate it.
If you hate it, then don't listen to this show.
I just want—I want one of those phones with the really long cords that they
Yeah,
have in the
yeah,
house as well.
yeah,
Yeah,
yeah. I want to feed a llama a joint of ham.
even do that the way he drinks stuff. He just like throws his head back and drinks it. Like...
Yeah. Hey, Tina,
anyway,
come get some dinner.
and
Tina,
he's
eat your
like,
food.
he's like launches like his tuna casserole over the
Tina.
fence. Right, come on.
Right.
Right. I'm just throwing Napoleon Dynamite
Yeah,
over.
we could. Yeah, we just could do that for the next half an hour. Oh dear. Yeah, the ACP recommends. And I think is that all for you, Dan?
Yes, that's all from
And
me.
then speak.
Do check out the hashtag March of the Mutants because that's we've only got a little bit left
Yes.
of that, and that's fucking going great.
Nice.
Easter next week,
Cannot.
isn't it? Yeah.
Whee!
Easter eggs.
Get your eggs out for the lads. Anyway, speaking of recommends, it's time for us to recommend some comics for you to go into your weeks and check out or search out or whatever you do. And Tony, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I'm going to start out with Pee Pee Poo
I
Poo.
knew you were going I
Like a
sorry. It just
classic.
makes me laugh every time.
By Carolyn Cash out of the ever cool Silver Sprocket. This is issue 80,085. I invite everyone at home to write those numbers
Now you
out,
type it into your calculator.
80085, and tell me what it says. I got my copy from Third Bed Press, as you should be doing as well. Go on there, get their site, and buy some of the American small press titles they have on there. Like I say, $9.99. I've seen worse, to be fair. It's magazine size, so it's not too bad. It does have color interiors. You also get a little sheet of stickers in there. How cool is that? Stickers are the coolness now.
That's
The
great.
cover is it gives off that feeling of a kind of an OG Marvel DC romance book. It's got spot varnish on the title on Pee Pee Poo Poo. It's got a little varnish on it, which seems wrong, but it does. Who varnishes their pee pee and their poo poo? But they do. It's got a little blurb on it that says, "Inside this issue, Victoria's Secret, lesbians, and Chicago." I'm sold on that. The first story is called "Boobs," and is an autobio story about the creator's love of boobs. So already we're best friends, and how it's one of the best things about being a lesbian. And the second story is about buying a bra. So already, I'm. But it's, don't think this is like
Highbrow.
written just for lesbians who buy bras. It's not. It's written for everyone. It's got that fun thing about it.
Yeah.
Dudes Rock is a story simply about two people catching up at a party. It feels a bit the lettering's really big in this. I don't know why I'm saying it like that, but it looks like a comic that is formatted for a normal American US size comic, but is given the magazine size on the page. So the lettering is massive. I think it's a stylistic choice, to be fair. I don't think that's, I'm sure it's not a mistake. It's a stylistic choice, but the lettering is massive on the page, which makes a change because I saw a Marvel artist this week moaning about how lettering is too small in a lot of comics, and I've got to make him write on it as an old man.
Okay.
Other stories include The Life of Young Hot Freelance Cartoonist, and it's the story of the daily routine of Caroline in her day. She has a good day, actually. She's a little snooze on the couch, all that sort of thing that I'm very jealous of. Danny's is a longer story. It's a color story. Some of the stories in the back, some of them are black and white, some of them are a single color, some of them are full color. And this is memories of a cool bar, a nightclub that is now closed that she got thrown out of once. Come Home to Me is another full color story. It's just a journey home, but it's a story that's written to a song, to song lyrics from a. Do you know who Liz Phair is? Liz
No,
Phair, sort of singer-songwriter character. very much a callback to 90s slacker culture for me. Do you remember, did you ever watch that movie Slacker?
Slacker.
In the 90s, isn't it? It's a sort of rolling series of vignettes of different characters who are just useless. I think it's set in LA, useless sort of slacker characters. And it's a little bit, it's got that feel about it. It even has some 90s references and some homages to 80s and 90s indie comic scene stylistically and in the layout of the cover. For example, we see it. Each cover of this has a, one has a sort of Crumb-esque thing, one has a Clausian thing. This has obviously got the romance comic style of things. The Life of Cartoonist story took me straight back to something you may have seen by someone like Evan Dorkin. It's got that vibe to it. I feel like Cash has less to say in this issue. I'll be honest with you. I didn't enjoy it quite as much as previous issues, but I like that she's out there doing it. It feels like a genuine attempt at an underground comic, and it also feels like a genuine attempt to put yourself out there and show your failings, often possibly more than the good side of your character. And I think there's not enough people like that. We read it, we laugh about it, don't we, occasionally, about autobiography comics that show people in this amazing light. You know, what was that one a few years ago about the woman wrote a thing about how she walked around the block and all she thought about was the terrible plight of libraries and children in the third world? And I thought, all I think about is what if I can have Wotsits with my tea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The answer is yes.
Yes. The includes a quote. The cover includes a quote from the Comics Journal comparing her to Peter Begg and Robert Crumb. And I'm going to keep getting it. I'm enjoying it still. I like that. I really like the format. It's nice to see Silver Sprocket doing this format for an autobiography comic. It takes me back to buying Minimum Wage and 8-Ball and stuff like that off the shelf in Mega City Comics and places like that are similar to that. So, yeah, so PP Poo Poo, issue 80,085, only $9.99. I know they've got copies of it in GOSH, but my advice would be, I think it came in like 2 days, to be fair, after I ordered it. Go to Third Bear Press and online and you can get your copies from there. I guess my first one.
Nice.
Nice.
I'm going to jump in next with my one that I read on Global Comics, but it was an anthology series.
Okay.
A Lung Full of Brine, which doesn't sound that pleasant, does it? And nor should it be, because it's a nautical horror anthology. This is from Dan Tappan, or Tappan. I hope I got that right, Dan. this was kickstarted in 2022. I, of course, just read it just on Global Comics. But if you go to the Kickstarter page, there's a little button there that says Read Now, which will take you immediately to the Global Comics, the actual page for the book, which I thought was quite interesting. I didn't know such things like that existed.
But
as for the book itself, this is five tales of terror from the depths, from demon fishermen to haunted conch shells. I had to say that really right then. it's a 92-page comic collection with five stories. It was all done, like I say, it was all done on Kickstarter. So I've literally just discovered this anthology because the cover by Alex McCormack is pretty fucking cool, if you ask me. It's loads of like skeletons just underneath the surface of a stormy sea. That immediately caught my attention. The stories within it are The Angler, Whispers from the Deep, The Man and the Mermaid, First Contact with Pod X or Pod 10, and Skin Graft. Now, this is Dan has written all of these, and he's got different creators, different artists on who I'll list off shortly. It starts off with an H.P. Lovecraft sort of what's the quote? That's it. I was going to say testimonial, but he didn't review it. It said, "Ocean is more ancient than the mountains, and freighted with the memories and dreams of time." Don't know why. It's always nice when you start like a horror book with like something like that, something like that. And immediately I thought, oh, and these are very different sort of horror tales. The one that stood out for me that I'm going to focus on is the first one of the book called The Angler. Art by Bob Bryce, colors by Danielle Saramanico, and letters by Reed Hinckley Barnes. This is a traveler who sort of hitched a ride on a train. He's just being kicked off. He's being kicked off this moving train, and he's obviously got nothing. And he just finds this place called Blister Bay and wanders into it. And one of the first things he sees is, you know, stormy sort of coastal town, is this angler who, large beard, one of those big sort of overcoats. He's just bringing a fish out of the sea, and even the main guy sort of saying, "Oh, nice catch!" This guy just then beats the fish to death. But the way that that whole sort of sequence plays out, there's already a wonderful sense of dread. And then as this hitchhiker moves further into the town, you know, he just wanted some food. He's got no money. It's a short little tale. As always with horror tales, there's a sting at the end of it, as there are with most of this sort of anthology. But it all just really impressed me, actually. There are different flavours of horror, whether it be... There's nothing that supremely goes for the gore or sort of graphic, sort of like, oh, look how disgusting this is, which I kind of appreciated. I think you can do so much with horror in comics, with atmosphere, you know, showing, don't telling. I know this is a show medium, isn't it? We're talking about artwork and we want to see the glorious things, but you can still really creep someone out without actually showing them. You know, you can still get a great punchline. And this really sort of delivered. It's, like I say, it's a quick read for, you know, different sort of tales. Some of them have... The one that's Whispers from the Deep is more of a... There's a mother and her son finds this shell, and they can... You know when you can hear the sea in... Well, they say you can hear the sea when you lift a shell up to your ears. The boy hears something else, and the tale only gets worse from there. It was just really impressive. I like the art in it. I'll just read out the names of the artists here that I'm getting straight from the Kickstarter page, and which was nicely laid out. I can't believe I missed this in 2020. Anyway, Alex Cormack was the cover artist. I've seen his name on many things. Renzo Podesta, R.H. Stewart, Mateus de Vincenzo, Bob Bryce, Nicholas Nieto, Danielle Saramanico, Sarah Hickey, Reed Hinckley Barnes, and Hanu Lee was the logo designer as well. If you just want, you know, if you want a nice little horror anthology, especially if you like something nautical, this really does deliver. I honestly thought, and I'll be honest now, I liked the cover, and I liked the design of the cover. I honestly thought the cover was going to be the best bit. You know, when you see these anthologies?
And
you just think, I thought, oh, right, okay, I know I'm going to be stopping after 5 pages. I did not stop until I finished it, and yeah. I immediately thought, yeah,
how many pages you got to go in on Global Comics before they get money? There's a number, isn't there?
Is there really? Well,
yeah, I think so.
I mean, Dan, you're welcome, because I read it all. So there you go. So a lungful of grind. I think it was on the homepage as well, so you can't miss it. It's quite an eye-catching cover. Lungful of Brine, Nautical Horror Anthology. I'm looking for, from the strength of these tales, I'm definitely going to have to see what else Dan has written, because it's nicely paced up. Nice one. Dan, speaking of Dans, what about Dan?
Yes.
Talk to me.
I got a book from AWA. I read a couple of their books this week. I did the old add this... publisher to your favorites and get notified every time they pop up a new book. I'm not going to read out the synopsis for this because it gives way too much away. And it's Little Black Book, and let me just zip forward to the creators, because it doesn't have it on the main page, which is
It's not great that book. I prefer a landing page before I press read, I think.
So it's Jeff McComsey, the writer, with Felipe Canha and the artist, who got Mark Lesko and the colorist, Steve Wands, letterer, and Francesco Francavella on the cover art.
I swear, McComsey, that name rings a bell. I swear I've read some stuff.
Really?
I can't remember what, but I'm sure I've mentioned that name before. But carry on.
It starts with a hit couple, and they were in their kind of caravan trailer. And they're not so great in the luck, and a solicitor turns up and says, like, your dad's died. And he's like, well, I never knew my dad. He was an arsehole. He left my family when we were kids. I don't know him. He goes, well, he's kind of left you this big house out, like, on the other side of the States, and it's all yours. And his girlfriend's pregnant. And they're like, well, we're going to need this place, so we're going to go there.
Oh, I've read this.
They turn up, empty house, absolutely fabulous. There, one morning, there's a leak in the roof, so he goes up in the loft to try and fix the pipe. Loft's completely empty apart from this little box, which he opens up, and inside There's a little black book and an old Nokia phone with a charger, and you get a full page shot of the black book, and it's full of names like with cleaners, this and that, names crossed out, stars, amendments. And he sort of goes down and talks to his wife, and they're like, well, obviously this isn't a book about like people who come around and clean your bathroom. They know this is really shady, and they don't really know much about the guy's dad. So you're like, well, okay, how's this going to play out? It cuts to a couple months later. The phone rings, and the guy picks up, and it's his pregnant wife, and she's gotten into a road accident and killed someone. And they get the book out, and the story goes from there. So,
Clever premise, isn't it?
yeah, it's a great premise. And it's great. I really enjoyed it. It was like, it felt like a kind of, okay, like we was talking about earlier, the book, the synopsis, the end of the issue. I'm on board with this. It's a great premise. I love it. I want to see where it goes. Art is
Nice.
really not overly rendered. It's quite simplest, not simple, but it really does the job. It's really accomplished. I really liked it. I had a really fun read all the way through.
Yeah, I'm
Finding
enjoying it again.
this, yeah, a lot with the AWA stuff. Just it's really well done stuff. I'm really enjoying it. And you
Nice.
can read all their titles on, well, most of their titles on Global Comics, which I'd recommend you do.
Nice. Tony, take us home.
Yeah, so last one, Underground Kingdom Comics Romance, edited by Matt Greaves. This is a Kickstarter was funded literally about a week ago, and the digital version has already landed, so I'm reviewing it off the digital version, although I have ordered the hard copy as well. This is the third issue of the run. It's basically an anthology that has romantic relationships as its central theme, but don't be thinking Milton Boone or Jackie Photo Story, well, as you
Okay.
often do, both you do. This tends very much to the transgressive area of underground comics, mostly. The cover's by Vincent Bell Robertson. I like it, works well. It's The first story is called Squeeze, a love story by Lily Blakely. This is not a story about the South London pop group who had hits with Up the Junction and Call for Cats. This is something else entirely. And it's a story about people who combine sweaty sex with pimple popping. Have you seen this? Like some program online or on TV you can watch about this doctor who just bursts
Yeah,
spots.
I've seen it as Pimple Popper.
God, it looks
I
awful, doesn't
watched
it?
it, and this fucking geezer had like this like stone in his back. It's like, oh Christ.
Oh my
Yeah.
God.
Oh God. I feel
Anyway,
sick.
that turns
Carry
that
on.
into a sexual fetish. And there's these two girls, and they're getting ready for a date and going over to each other's house. And you realize one of them, they start popping spots, and it becomes a
Oh
cavity, and
mate.
the cavity becomes an entrance. And it screams, I meant to mention him second time this show, Charles Burns to me. Sex can be at once disgusting, but also at the same time a massive turn on in a sort of really weird world. And it's got that sort of darkness about it, that twisted Charles Burns-esque dark. Even the line work actually reminds me a little bit of his work, actually, which is a massive compliment. The next story is by our boy Falpy, Lovers Under the Covers. Fucking hell. What does he do? How does his mind work? But it's single added color treatment. Man is finding that although he's a dutiful husband, sex with his wife has become stale and robotic. He begins spending more and more time in the comic shop or with his own collection. And one day he's going through the back issue box when he finds something he describes as very fine, which we all know is a grading, but I think he means something else by that. And you can probably see where this is going. And the man starts an affair, asks his wife for a divorce, and attends an orgy. And as the story goes, and it's a fairly long story for this book. As the story goes on, you begin to realize that perhaps he isn't having sex with a woman. Could he be having sex with a box of comics? There's that possibility. He's caught up in the world of cuckoldry, sex parties, and hallucinatory depression. And I genuinely think some of Falpy's, I say this with every time with him, but he's so improving. Seriously, some of his best work so far. I was texting about it, we chatted about it yesterday. And it's fucking nuts, but it's imaginative and it works really well within the confines of an underground comic. Perfect. And I've made him promise that it's not about me. This.
Yeah, Well, you showed us a cover of a book you got coming up, and mate, that looks fucking amazing.
Ain't that great?
It's
Yeah, so
really
good.
good, really good.
Yeah, very eye-catching, isn't
Yeah, I'm totally on board with that. Like,
it? Yeah, I can't wait for that. So, more about that in the upcoming weeks. But the final story is Barrel Fever, and it's the, as I say, the third story in the collection, and it's by one of our favourites, Anna Redman, Reedman, and it's a Western story of a female bank robber who is robbed herself, and she teams up with a dude to get her money back. And wouldn't you know it, whilst after having sex, they tumble off the edge of a cliff naked. And they fall into the company of the people who robbed them, and they have to have a gunfight. He's got an erection, and she's sort of running around naked. Lovely art. I'm going to say probably of the three, the least that feels like an underground comic, the least that would fit into probably
Okay.
Zap or something like that,
Yeah.
but very accomplished. And she's got a great line, a line on her work. There's extra interior art by Kai Reynolds as a pin-up, and it ends up with a pin-up by Matt Greaves. Another good one. I can see this running and running, running this as a series of books. The only thing I'd like to see is perhaps bigger format. Maybe go with that Zap magazine size. It's slightly bigger than A5, slightly smaller than American US comic size. So I'd like to see it become a longer collection. They put three out. Show they can sh they can show they can do it. Matt, I think Matt's edited all three of them. I think they, you know, they're capable of doing it. Let's have something that's a bit longer. Let's have something that's a bit bigger in format as well, but for what it is, great stuff. Choice artists going well, great to see. Yeah, so it's part of the series called Underground Kingdom Comics. You can find them on Kickstarter, go and look them up. And I think, well, I'm guessing that once the physical copies have been sent out for people, it'll be for sale after that. So I'm going to look at that one. Yeah, that's my second one.
Nice one.
Nice. So
Yeah.
there you have it, folks. Tons of awesome comics to check out. And of course, there would be, because this is the Awesome Comics Podcast. And thank you very
Yeah.
much for listening to this episode, whenever or wherever you listened to it. And whatever we talked about, keep the conversation going. And certainly let us know what you want us to talk about in future episodes. We've got a few topics bubbling around. We've got some guests we're sort of trying to line up at the moment. But
Easter episode coming up.
Yeah.
Gonna be very interesting. So
It's on the day as well, isn't it? Well, we're recording on the day.
yeah.
He has risen.
Oh God.
I've got my Jean-Claude Van Damme picture where he's getting crucified in the film Cyborg to tweet later on this week.
Nice,
Keep your eyes
nice,
peeled for that.
lovely, nice and blasphemous.
Yeah.
And but certainly, if there's anything you want us to speak about in upcoming episodes, there's several different ways you can get in touch with us or follow the show. You can email us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on social media. On X, we're at The Awesome Pod, and we're on Instagram at Awesome Comics Pod. On both of them, we'll be tweeting out or talking about the show and everything that we talk about on a weekly basis. So please follow us there. Thank you for listening, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, leave a review, helps the word get the word out about the show and all the comics we talk about on a weekly basis. And likewise, Spotify, you can also review on there. I think you can probably review on a lot of things actually. So if you
Yeah.
can, leave us a nice review. That'd be very nice, and we love you forever and be your best friend. That's what you used to do in school, wasn't it? I never did it, but people always say, "Oh, I'll be your best friend." It's like,
They
well,
just wanted to be your
you
best
don't
friend,
get
didn't
to
they?
pick
That's
that.
it. You ever bought a t-shirt off a site and they go, leave a review? What do you want me to say?
Yeah, it
My every
fits.
day, because I stay in a lot of hotels for work. I can't be, but I haven't got the time to go and leave a review for your fucking
Yeah.
hotel.
How was your stay?
Yeah.
We're still waiting. How was your stay? Get
Yeah,
fucked.
yeah.
But saying that, please leave a review. And if you listen to us on Amazon, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
We're on the Pod Network. Before I knew what was happening, I blew my load in a Sasquatch.
Now, that was a killer line out of that fucking thing. That's great.
Great.
Absolutely great.
One of my favourite little reels. And to double down on that today, I watched Night of the Demon. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah.
The fuck? I did not
I've only
expect
seen
that.
that recently.
This
That one.
fucking n nasty one.
Yeah. Please,
That's kind of friendly there, Vince.
after that, if you want to follow us online, there's several different ways you can do
Or
it.
see me naked.
Tony, where can people find you?
Neverrightanything.com. Every Wednesday, tops and bottoms.
Yes.
Which is about comics, not
Yeah, I made it sound rude.
You read it and I will promote it and
Thank you,
retweet
mate.
it. Yeah,
Thank you.
there you go.
Good stuff.
And Dan, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter, aka X.
Why did you say like that?
At Vanguard Comic. And you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Nice, which you should. And you can find me online at Jester Diablo on Instagram if you just want to see me carrying big sticks. That's right, big stick energy.
I saw
all
that.
The way. Yeah. If I
he's like, it's like she takes a puppy out with her who finds a stick, isn't it? That's
it. It's totally that. If I find a big stick, I'm going to pick it up.
If you're going for a walk in the woods or whatever, you always got to grab a big stick.
What if you're attacked in the woods? Yeah. What if you're attacked in the woods? You've got to defend yourself.
Exactly.
That's all
it,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But it was follow me on Instagram if you want to see how big that stick was. Anyway, I don't know why I said it like
big
that.
Big as a head.
That was really... Anyway, thank you for listening, everyone. We hope you have a brilliant week and read lots of comics. Certainly keep making those comics because we want to read them. And keep the conversation going and keep recommending lots of comics you discover to your friends and your family and anyone that will listen, because that's how we discover the comics. So tune in next week to see what comics you might discover. But until then, from Dan, Tony and myself, have a brilliant week. Stay safe, healthy, and wonderful like we know you all are. I'm not going to give Tony a chance to disagree. And as always, what should they do, guys?
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
See ya.
See ya.
See ya later.